Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On today's Your Call, we are continuing our conversation about California's affordable housing crisis. Last week, we discussed renters' rights and the fight for rent control. Today, we are talking about the politics and the money behind efforts to build affordable housing. According to the state's Legislative Analyst's Office, 1.7 million low-income California renters spend more than half of their income on rent. You have probably seen so many stories about people living in garages, RVs, tents, their cars, and on the streets. Buying a home is just out of the question for many families, couples, and individuals. Providing subsidized homes for those renters would cost the state $15 billion a year. And then during the crisis, the federal government is cutting back. The new tax bill is likely to shave 20% off of California's funds for affordable housing, resulting in 4,000 new units not being built. There are a number of solutions at the state level, and we're going to dive into all of this. There's a lot to discuss. We're joined by two guests today. Amy Fishman is executive director of the Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California. They represent more than 750 affordable housing developers, advocates, and businesses. And Amy joins us in studio. Hi, Amy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. Sam Moss is executive director of the Mission Housing Development Corporation, one of the largest nonprofit housing organizations in San Francisco, serving 3,000 residents. They've been creating and preserving affordable housing since 1971. Sam also joins me in studio. Hi, Sam. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, let's just lay out what we are dealing with. We have a major, major crisis on our hands. This has been happening for a long time now, but it's now finally getting a lot of attention. A couple of numbers here. The Sacramento Bee had a piece about all cities and counties in California, 97.6%, that's almost all, are failing to approve the housing needed to keep pace with population growth. And I mentioned that other statistic, 1.7 million low-income California renters spend more than half of their income on rent, and providing subsidized homes for them would cost the state $15 billion a year. Amy, what else would you add when you look at the overall picture that we're dealing with?
Yeah, I'd like to say that numbers and statistics are so critical to understand where we are today, but to talk about what this means in human terms is so critical. You have hundreds of thousands of people struggling to make ends meet, struggling to keep a roof over their head, making difficult choices about whether to pay the phone bill, keep the lights on, put food on the table, or pay rent. That is just not a way to run the sixth largest economy in the world. And in fact, in our nation, we are also facing a crisis of critical proportions, and the human cost is enormous. If somebody is ill, they cannot get well if they don't have a safe and stable and affordable home. If you're a kid and you're doing your homework, it's really hard to excel in school with your schoolwork if you don't have a stable place to live. If you're an employer and you're trying to hire talent, but your employees cannot afford to live anywhere near where the job is, there's in all ways housing underpins our economy and our society, and it's that the human terms of the human costs that are so critical today.
It is such a good point. And what came up on last week's show about rent control is we used to focus this conversation on places like San Francisco and Oakland and the peninsula. But now we're talking about places like Santa Rosa, Vallejo, Fresno that are seeing massive rent hikes. Sam, what would you add when you look at the overall picture?
I mean, I think that's a really good point. The crisis has been here for a really long time. Low-income people have been struggling in this country before President Trump got elected. But because of how severe it is right now, we're finally taking a kind of a regional look at not only the crisis but the solutions. And so while it's dire, and I don't think anyone wants anyone to be homeless, I do think that we're finally taking a look at the issue in a way that can solve it, or at least attack it in more of a way that isn't just, band-aids on the problem.
We have a lot to talk about today because the federal government is now cutting back. This tax bill will likely shave 20% off of California's funds for affordable housing. And then there are a number of proposals at the state level. So why don't we start off by talking about how this tax bill will affect affordable housing in California?
Yeah, and for context, the last time we faced a major crossroads in how our nation has invested in homes for the lowest income communities around the country was in 1986 with the Reagan-Bush era tax cuts. And essentially, federal programs to invest in communities got privatized and put into the tax code. And so since then, the largest producer of affordable housing has been this low-income housing tax credit program, which essentially is a public-private nonprofit partnership, and where corporations essentially invest in affordable housing in order to get a tax credit. And it has been an incredibly tried, true, tested program and has built millions of homes across the country since then. And so now that the corporate tax rate has been slashed from 35% to 21%, the value of those tax credits has gone way down. And already we have seen the loss of $500 million just in California alone based on this cut from when there was an anticipated cut and then the actual cut. And so that is what we're seeing. And the result is that this corporate tax cut is going to blow a huge hole in the funding for affordable housing and will have major consequences around the country and here in California in the Bay Area.
Yeah, and if I could add that, like to say, you know, go on with what Amy said, it's just the thought of the tax cut, you know, started decimating the potential developments in affordable housing. One thing that I am proud of is, you know, San Francisco at least does and is building more affordable housing than, you know, a lot of states in the country. But housing isn't built right away. I mean, I wish I had a magic wand and you could just say, like, a building will be there and it's there. But it takes 18 months, 2 years in the best of times when you get your permits to actually build the housing. And so cities like San Francisco and Oakland have a long pipeline of developments that is out, you know, 10 years. And so it's important to remember that it's not just the potential units that haven't been, you know, designed yet. It's literal units that were approved that the cities thought were coming online that are also being affected. And that should scare everybody.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the housing that is being built in places like San Francisco and Oakland. But to stick with the news about what's happening at the federal government, can you both talk about how that money flows? I mean, a lot of this information is new to people. Most people have no idea what goes on behind the scenes. How does a building actually get built, right?
Yeah, I mean, if anyone could tell me that, that'd be awesome. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, so a building is built typically. It's a private nonprofit development company like Mission Housing that will partner with a local municipality like San Francisco. So San Francisco most likely will purchase the land that the building will be on and then offer what's called a ground lease to the private developer. And the reason that's done is because a private developer like Mission Housing can go and apply for, there's federal funds, there's state funds, and then there's other local funds. And in conjunction with the city, when you pile all of that money together, then you get basically enough money to build the building. And the rents that come in are based on the monies that you get. They all have different requirements. And so then the rents kind of service the existing building.
And how are the decisions made about, say, renting the unit versus selling the unit? Where to put the price point? Mm-hmm. Is a two-bedroom $5,000 a month or $2,500 a month?
So the rent is based on the income level of a tenant. Typically, you can't make more than 60% of what's called the area median income of an area to qualify. That's how you qualify for the affordable housing. So around $40,000, give or take, for one person qualifies. Now, that rent is supposed to be tagged at no more than 30% of a tenant of a family's income. You mentioned that, you know, so many people are paying over 50%. Mm-hmm. That's rent burden. So the thing about affordable housing is that it legally makes sure that a tenant doesn't pay more than about 30% of their income.
And just to add to this, I think one of the ways to think about affordable housing finance is you have a layer cake, mm-hmm. and you stack together all of these different sources of funding. It's a little bit like doing rocket science. And at the same time, it's also very straightforward. The affordable housing is what the market will not build. It's homes for low-income seniors, people with disabilities, people who have special needs in relation to their housing, have been homeless, families who are working poor, low-income, the full range of who needs homes and that cannot afford what's on the market. And so you layer all of these sources of funding together from the federal government, from the state government, from the county governments and the city governments, plus any kind of private philanthropy or any other sources that come in. And you have to layer that all together to meet the cost of what it takes to build and then also the cost of what it takes to operate and provide services at that building over time. The rents only provide a small portion of the income that's needed to run and operate the building. And nonprofit affordable housing development offers the highest quality management, operations, and services in their property, become a stable anchor in communities, and is not only affordable housing that's safe and quality housing and affordable today, but also for future generations. So it's a long-term investment. That's why you need that layer cake to make that happen. And when you pull out the floor of that layer cake, which is some of the federal funding, what's going to happen? All the other sources need to fill it in so the whole thing doesn't collapse. So the low-income housing tax credit program thankfully survived through this tax cut. We all worked incredibly hard across the country to ensure that they didn't cut huge slices off of that program. And so the program survived, but it's just in a diminished form because of the reduction of corporate tax rates. So what we're seeing is, you know, $1.5 trillion of debt getting created by the federal government going directly to back into a corporate windfall, and then communities across the country are feeling that that burden. So we here in California have a lot of steps and action to take to make sure that we protect our communities, that we invest in our values of what it takes to be what it takes to live, and that housing is so fundamental to everything.
That is Amy Fishman, Executive Director of the Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California. Sam Moss is Executive Director of the Mission Housing Development Corporation. Today, we are continuing our conversation about California's affordable housing crisis by talking about the politics and the money behind efforts to build affordable housing. If you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. If you've got a personal story you'd like to share about your housing situation, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or leave a comment on social media. Mark in San Leandro couldn't stand the line, but he feels like, you know, the middle class kind of gets left out of this. I mean, what is middle class anymore, right, in today's terms? What is affordable? I mean, that's the thing that I think we should talk about, because you've got teachers who can't afford to live here. My friend was an environmental lawyer. He just got Ellis acted. He doesn't think he can afford to live in San Francisco. So when we say affordable, what are we talking about exactly?
Well, I mean, there's two kinds of housing and affordable housing. I think that it gets confusing for people. I always say that there's like capital A, capital H affordable housing, which is the deed restricted housing that Amy and I have been describing. And then there's housing that is affordable for everybody. And I get frustrated because I think a lot of times we pit the two against each other when we just want everyone to have a home. You know, I think the fact that the middle class is being affected right now, arguably in a way that's kind of the first time in history, the fact that that's bringing light to the crisis that we are, everyone now is looking at how hard it is to build homes and to make sure that people can remain in those homes and not be scared to be evicted and not be scared to pay all their income. On the one hand, I'm happy that people are noticing it, but on the other, you know, it's frustrating that this is what it took. But, you know, I mean, I think affordable housing is housing that someone not only isn't worried about being evicted every day, but also that you aren't paying more than about 30% of your income for the housing, whether that be for a mortgage or rent.
Amy, what would you add when we're talking about what affordable actually means?
Yes. And I think what we also have to look at is that where have incomes been? Incomes have stayed flat or declined over the latest period. We can look at what played out since the 2008, the foreclosure crisis and the Great Depression, where millions of people lost their homes across the country. The real estate market turned upside down. And we saw the impact of what happened when you break the system around housing in this country. The world economy collapses. So housing is so fundamental. We see it as a component of a private household budget, as a private good, but it really is a fundamental part of our public infrastructure and requires that kind of public investment. So as Sam described, it's either what the market is able to produce to meet the needs of the population, or that what additional investments the government needs to make to build what the housing market alone cannot. And what we are seeing is that the market is broken up the income chain right now. So not only can the market not build affordable housing for the lowest income and highest need communities that it historically has never been able to build, but it also cannot build for middle income even those, you said, you're the environmental lawyer, the teacher, the computer programmer. It is very difficult right now for anyone except for the very rich to afford homes. So something is terribly wrong in the way that our system is. And at the same time, there are many solutions, and the solutions are very clear and not that complicated.
And if I could just add to that, I think right now we're seeing the result of, you know, the market has been trying to build, the, you know, this middle income, this market rate housing. It has been, the developers have been trying to build units for the last 30, 40 years throughout California. But, you know, we've had a chronic shortage and undersupply of housing built in the region a lot because we've allowed, you know, the stopping of developments because of things like neighborhood character or people being afraid of infrastructure. You know, you have the mayor of Brisbane saying that we'll bring the jobs and San Francisco can just build the housing. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm excited because, as Amy said, there are solutions. And for the first time, we really can take a regional look at attacking the problem for everyone.
We'll talk about solutions. I want to ask you both about developers. This is another issue I'm guessing a lot of people don't know much about. If you ask someone on the street, can you name one of the big developers or a low-income developer? They probably couldn't. What incentives are out there to get developers to build affordable housing as opposed to luxury housing, which is, you know, taking off, and people are paying extremely high prices for luxury housing in the Bay Area?
Well, I think the first thing we can do is make it so that the only place that you can really build housing that's dense and attacks the problem is in a couple neighborhoods of San Francisco. You know, we've allowed the entire West Side to essentially be a suburb, and that makes it expensive to build in the areas where it's allowed. I struggle with the term luxury housing. I think it gets thrown out a lot to kind of demonize any and all market rate housing.
All right, let's say a place that rents a one bedroom for $5,000 a month.
Which is luxury. You know, and the reason that we have that is because, as I've said, we've made it impossible to build anything but really, really tall towers in Transbay. Or, you know, affordable housing in Mission and Transbay and or nothing, you know. And so I think one of the incentives that we can do is to kind of broaden the areas where you're allowed to build those 3 or 4 story apartment buildings that everyone kind of romanticizes now in the Richmond but are technically illegal.
Now, do developers do both high-end and affordable? Are there some developers that just focus on affordable? Can you explain how that works?
So the vast majority of developers that build affordable housing, particularly in the Bay Area, are nonprofit, mission-driven community organizations that have the expertise and the history and the track record of building high-quality, affordable housing for generations. Market rate housing tends to be built or is built by for-profit businesses, firms that are in that particular business. It is a very different process. There are similarities in how you build just housing in the market versus how you build affordable housing. But the financing is completely different, and the level of government accountability and the public good that you're providing with affordable is different from the logic behind market rate housing. And market rate housing is built for what the market can bear, and you can only build it if you're going to be able to achieve the rents to cover what the costs are. And when the costs are so high, then you can't build it unless you're going to get those high rents. And because our economy right now in the world and in this country is more unequal than it has ever been, you have this bifurcation of the ultra wealthy that are buying their pied-à-terres and their second homes, or renting out their Airbnb, or, you know, having it as an investment property, or you have international companies mm-hmm. investing in properties in San Francisco and places around the state. So it is skewed the market. The market for housing should be about meeting the need for homes for people who live here. And it is doing much more than that. It's serving as an investment good.
I think it's also important I completely agree with what Amy just said. Just an anecdotal example. You know, last night in Millbrae, for the umpteenth time over the last 2.5 to 3 years, a developer had to go back to the planning or the commission to try to get an approval to build about 400 units of market rate and affordable at the Millbrae BART station. And these rents will be reasonable. You know, they're not a Millennium Tower. This is a wood frame, four-story, you know, not as expensive as a Millennium Tower thing to build, both for the market rate and affordable. And the people who live there, the Millbrae citizens, showed up with a bunch of signs that said, "More office, not housing." And this is what I mean about expanding the area where we're allowed to build, because that housing will help everyone. I firmly believe that 400 units above the Millbrae BART station helps people in the Mission as much as 400 units above the 16th Street BART station. Because they're connected by this same train called BART. And, you know, the fact that it's taken 3 years to get to the point where we can build those units, it affects everyone negatively.
Amy, what do you think about that?
I absolutely think that every community and every city in the region and across the state needs to do its fair share to build homes that people need in the community. And it doesn't work when some jurisdictions say we're only going to build jobs and somebody else is going to do the housing. And what creates that dynamic is our tax structure and good old Prop 13, which disincentivizes building residential property and incentivizes building commercial property. So jurisdictions, through the fiscalization of land use and the slashing of property tax in this state, it is very difficult to invest in residential when communities are saying, we don't have the resources to provide the services, and what we really need is commercial development, so that will bring in taxes to help balance our budget and meet our needs. So what we need to do is restructure our tax system, and we also need to push jurisdictions, every jurisdiction, to do its fair share in providing housing for all income levels, and particularly for the lowest income communities.
Amy Fishman is executive director of the Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California. They represent more than 750 affordable housing developers, advocates, and businesses. Sam Moss is executive director of the Mission Housing Development Corporation. They serve 3,000 residents, one of the largest nonprofit housing organizations in San Francisco. And on today's Your Call, we are continuing our conversation about California's affordable housing crisis. Last week, we discussed renters' rights and the fight for rent control, and you can find that at yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the politics and the money behind efforts to build affordable housing. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rosa Aguilar. On tomorrow's show, we are going to talk about class. Anna Sale, creator of WNYC's podcast Death, Sex, and Money, recently aired a series on how we perceive and talk about class. When people are surveyed, they say they're either middle class or working class, but the truth is we're experiencing record inequality. That is tomorrow, and then Friday, it's our media roundtable. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us an email, yourcall@kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's show, We actually just have full lines. We'll have one open in a few minutes, but you can email yourcall@kalw.org. What do you think are solutions to this affordable housing crisis? And if you have any questions about how this process works, sometimes there's a building in San Francisco, and I think, how did this happen? What were the decisions behind it? Who is the developer? How much is spent on this? What are the rents? What are you seeing in your area? In terms of rents, affordability, new housing, what would you like to see? There's push and pull over the density of the buildings, where they are. What are your thoughts on that? Who should make the decisions? Today, we're joined by Sam Moss, ED of the Mission Housing Development Corporation. Amy Fishman is ED of the Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California. And let's hear from Richard in San Francisco. Hi, Richard. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Richard.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, so I had a couple of questions. One is, my understanding is that if you factor in the cost of the land for city-owned land or otherwise, it costs in the range of about $800,000 per unit for the city to build an affordable housing unit. Is that right? And if it's incorrect, what is the range of what the cost is? Because that seems incredibly not inaccurate, but when it's that expensive to build an affordable housing unit, seems like it'd be very hard to build many of them.
Thank you, Richard.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. First of all, it is incredibly hard to build affordable housing in the best of times. You know, the price fluctuates, including the cost of the land, not including it. You know, I think $800,000 is a little high. It's on the high range, but it's certainly around $600,000, $700,000 to build a unit. We can all agree that's a lot per unit. But I really want to stress, as Amy said before, these 100% affordable housing buildings are not just about the housing that we're building. Okay, so the industry of affordable housing is called upon to solve almost every problem in the world, whether it be health or food access or job creation or access to things like computer labs. So when an affordable housing development is built, the ground floor of that building not only serves the residents that live there. The ground floor of that building is structured so that there's a free computer lab and there's community rooms and there's places for health screenings and there's, you know, there's places for food pantry, and that serves the entire neighborhood where that building is built. So, you know, I agree that the cost per unit is high, but I ask that everyone realize that that cost per unit is also factoring in all of these services that the private affordable housing development industry is called upon to provide, because the government has unfortunately been pulling back from providing all of those services. And yeah, it's hard to do, but that's what it is.
And I would just add around cost, think about how much our government spends on transportation systems, on highways and roads, how much our government spends on education and health care, how much we spend on public safety. Think about major public goods that we all care about, that we believe there needs to be an investment in. Housing is that same system of infrastructure that we need, where everything else sits on. Instead of, you know, you could go to the doctor and get a prescription for a pill that is $1,000 to take a day. But we cannot get rent subsidies to support a family to stay in their home for $1,000 a month. So the way that we think about housing needs to look different, and it needs to reflect the major investment, the way that it is this platform that everything else sits on. And yes, it's expensive, and there are ways that we can do it which it would be less expensive, but we also need to start thinking about large-scale public investment in housing.
And Sam explained why the housing costs are so high, but what would you add to that, Amy?
Well, I would add that the cost to build infill density in cities near transit with a lot of infrastructure, those costs go up. It was really cheap, relatively speaking, to pave the suburbs, to pave open space and build sprawl out in communities. We had a building boom in you know, earlier eras, and it was because you could just clear away farmland and you could clear away that forest and just build single-story homes, and that's a much less expensive way to build if you take into account those costs to actually construct that home. But it's an incredibly expensive way to build if you take into account the costs of traffic, the costs to the environment, the loss of open space, and how that degrades our community. And so we need to invest in building equitably and smarter in cities and in communities along transit, and that's just more expensive.
And
it requires more planning.
If I could just add that the $800,000 unit, you know, number that gets thrown out a lot, that's a San Francisco number. Mm-hmm. And the reason that number gets thrown out a lot is because, to be frank, San Francisco is really one of the only major cities in California that has taken it upon itself to do its duty and build affordable housing. You know, George Lucas couldn't even build affordable housing on his own land, fully private developed in Marin, because they were afraid of low-income housing. And so if we want to smooth out the amount per unit, we need to start thinking about all of the downtowns in all of the towns of all of California building affordable housing, because I would love for that number to come down.
Well, thank you for the phone call. Let's go next to Victoria in San Francisco. Hi, Victoria.
Hi. Good morning, everyone. I just wanted to address the ever-growing concern that nonprofit workers and teachers simply can't afford to live in SF or even the Bay Area in general. And I want to know if the speakers had any opinions or proposed ideas about that issue. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a really great question. Teacher housing, actually specifically, is being built in San Francisco. Currently, we're in the competition part of the request for proposal out at 43rd and Kirkham Avenue at the Francis Scott Key Annex. And so that is one great idea is the state a couple years ago said that if a municipal, if a school, unified school district owns the land, and they have a private nonprofit developer come in and build housing on that land, then it can be what's – it's called teacher housing because that's an easy buzzword, but what it really is unified district worker housing. So anyone that works for the school, teachers, janitors alike, are qualified to get high-quality, affordable housing that won't be more than 30% of their income on that land. And so I actually – truly believe that if a nonprofit owns the land, it should be able to provide the same thing. I think that the fact that we've made it legal to build the teacher housing, and that when I say legal, I mean it doesn't violate fair housing law, where you can say just someone that works at the unified district can have it. Because we've done that, I think we've opened up a pathway to write similar laws that allow for things like nonprofits, or, you know, I think the MTA and the people who drive our buses and things like that. I mean, they need help just as much. And there are entities and, you know, public entities throughout the state that own a massive amount of land. So the land is there, and we just need to have the public will to build on it.
I would agree that there are a lot of innovations right now, a lot of models and pilots that are being developed to address the so-called missing middle, or those people that make more than who can qualify to live in affordable housing, but not enough to afford what's on the market. So there are a lot of approaches and strategies to invest. Some of the government programs are very specifically targeted, and that's why there's that missing middle part. But there's a lot of efforts to pull together new programs, to look at the state level about whether there can be new programs created to meet the fuller range of affordable needs.
And when we're talking about low-income people, let's say seniors who are living off of Social Security checks or people with disabilities, we have an email from Rose who says, please discuss the minimum income required for, quote, affordable housing. I get email notices about available housing, but my income is too low to qualify for affordable housing. Even the cheapest studios are over 100% of my income. She says 30% of her income is about $360, and she currently pays twice that for rent. I mean, what I think is just horrific is so many older people on a fixed income who've had rent control for a long time are being kicked out of their places. Where are they supposed to go?
It is so devastating to think about it, and it's not the way that it's not. It doesn't reflect our values here in California or in the Bay Area, and we need to do do better. We need to do it differently. So what you just described is the issue of that layer cake that we were talking about earlier. And some programs only meet a certain level of affordability. And if you make below that, you really need an additional rent subsidy. You need a Section 8 subsidy. You need a veterans voucher. You need some other kind of voucher or subsidy so that you could make, maybe you make zero. Mm. But you need a place to get back on your feet, and you need a place to get well, and you need a place to be able to get off the street. And those programs, that comes from the federal government through HUD, Housing and Urban Development, and it's a major investment that historically has shown that it's critical. We need that rent subsidy to make it work. There are localities that are trying to find a way to replicate that kind of a subsidy, a local operating subsidy. Here in San Francisco, there are models for it. Around the Bay Area, there are models. And L.A. has taken on a major program, very exciting work. Actually, some of the leadership from here in San Francisco helped to create that program, Dr. Mitch Katz and Mark Trotz and others in L.A. County. And it's to create that local operating subsidy to get people off the street so that it functions like a Section 8 where you pay 30% of your income, whatever your income level is. So we need the full range of affordable options from those people making below, you know, quote unquote, 30% of the area median income to people making above 60% of the area median income. And we have the resources. We are not in a resource scarce environment. California is such a wealthy state in comparison to the world. It's how those resources have been distributed. And as your, you know, other show that you talked about, we're in record inequality. Right. We need to start tackling the inequality to be able to meet housing needs. It is absolutely something that we know how to do. We have organizations like Mission Housing and others that have built affordable housing for decades. We have developers that are capable of building what communities need. Unfortunately, what is happening in the market is not exactly building what communities need. And that needs to change. And there are ways to change that through these kinds of innovations and new public investment.
And I mean, Amy brings up a really great point that we have the resources. You know, you take something like the mortgage interest tax deduction, which our country spends, we spend four times the amount on the mortgage interest tax deductions if you count that's money, resources not coming in on homes over $1 million, four times as much as we have allocated resources for all of the subsidized affordable housing and low income health combined. So, you know, like Amy said, we need to decide how we're expending the resources, and we need to do a better job of smoothing it out equitably across the spectrum.
And I want to get to solutions, but just to make a last jab that for decades, we as an affordable housing community across the country were saying, reform the federal mortgage interest deduction program, cap it, and take that savings and invest it in homes for the people who need it the most. Because the mortgage interest deduction was not expanding home ownership as was the purported goal. It was, in fact, incentivizing more homes and more expensive homes. And that did not serve a public purpose. Instead, what happened? That program got capped and reduced in order to pay for the $1.5 trillion tax cut for corporations. So we're not going to see solutions from our federal government. We are going to be in defense and in battle mode and working with our partners across the country to help defend what we have. But we need to look here in California and be that beacon of hope and that light and that state that says we care about our communities, we care about inclusion, we care about investing in the right way. And in fact, inequality is bad for growth. It's bad for the economy. It's bad for our health. It's bad for, you know, equality and having more equitable systems and more inclusive and diverse systems is not just our values. It's good for us.
Amy Fishman is Executive Director of the Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California, and Sam Moss is Executive Director of the Mission Housing Development Corporation. Today, we are talking about the politics and the money behind efforts to build affordable housing. We have so many phone calls, and I just want to make sure we get to a lot of them, but I don't want to end without talking about solutions. So, Amy, what's at the top of your list?
Well, the top of our list is what happened when we decided to go to the voters and see what voters wanted to do about this issue. And we began a program of polling and opinion research and found out that affordable housing and ending homelessness was at the top of people's priority list. It was a concern above traffic, above education, and public safety and health and all those things that are top priorities. So it's just to say that housing has become the number one issue that communities want to tackle. So not only did voters express those sentiments, they voted that way in supermajorities. And in 2015, voters passed an affordable housing bond, and NPH was part of a major effort to spearhead putting affordable housing funding measures on the ballot in Alameda County, in San Mateo County, and Santa Clara County in 2016. All three of those measures passed with supermajorities. We pushed a major effort and leveraged that momentum to the state level. And last year, the governor signed a historic package of affordable housing legislation that was attempting to make an impact on a number of arenas. And some of them were critical measures for funding affordable housing. One of them placed a bond on the state ballot this year. So everyone, all listeners, everyone in our communities has an opportunity to vote for the affordable housing bond at the state level and to get our communities gathered together to vote for it.
This is the $4 billion.
This is correct. The $4 billion state bond.
Okay.
Yes.
So to this point, we have a couple listeners who say, why don't we support moratoriums on any new market rate housing and mandate only affordable housing be built for a number of years until we truly tackle this issue?
Well, part of the issue is that we need more housing and that the scarcity of housing is part of what's driving up costs. It's not everything, but it is a huge part of what's driving up costs. So moratoriums will have, in fact, the opposite effect. And until we invest larger amounts of funds, we need hundreds of billions of dollars to invest in affordable housing, because just to say we're only going to build affordable housing without creating the funding sources isn't going to achieve the goal either. And I do want to say that when we talk about transportation investments, we are talking about hundreds of billions of dollars. So when we talk about affordable housing investments, we need to be talking about hundreds of billions of dollars, because that's what it's going to take. Every year, we need an annual infusion of $10 billion, $15 billion. And that is possible if we look at the way that we use our resources, because we spend a lot more money taking care of people who don't have a home and who are living on the street than we would if they were housed in permanent supportive housing, for example. Mm-hmm. Or talk about frail elderly seniors. We spend a lot more money taking care of people and in other kinds of settings instead if they had stable, affordable housing. That is not only good for people, it's also the right thing to do and economical.
And, you know, to go back to, like, why don't we just have a moratorium? I think we've already established that, you know, capital A, capital H, affordable housing is extremely important, but it serves a very specific portion of the population, you know, based on income. And so if you make, you know, if you make 65% of the median income, you'll find yourself not qualifying for that affordable housing, and yet no way near being having enough money to, you know, qualify for what's a really expensive market rate. And so instead of a moratorium, you know, I would like to see us go and force all of the towns in the Bay Area to do their fair share for market rate housing also. Because it is expensive to only build in Mission Bay and the Trans Bay instead of building in Lafayette, instead of building in Orinda, instead of building in Marin. And when we make ourselves be okay with, you know, I love my neighborhood character, I just go build that housing somewhere else, we manufacture the situation that we're in. We created this situation by making it okay to only build housing in very dense populated areas, and we can do better.
Well, again, really important information is there will be a $4 billion affordable housing bond on the November ballot, and we'll do shows around that. Let's hear from Glenn in San Francisco. Hi, Glenn. Welcome to the show.
Hello. I'm referring to an article I just read on 48 Hills by Tim Redmond about Senator Wiener's SB 827, which he quotes the SF Planning Department saying the bill is a huge giveaway to developers and property owners that doesn't increase the percentage of affordable housing. I don't know if you've heard about this bill or not.
Yes.
But yeah. It seems to be very disturbing. It seems to hamstring the local planning process, and it seems to significantly upzone the entire city, according to him, and could make the minimum heights limit 100 feet, but doesn't much affect the peninsula because the peninsula doesn't have a very good transit corridor or something. I don't know how.
Well, thank you for that, Glenn. I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to discuss this. I'm reading now from the LA Times, just to give people some background. Senator Scott Wiener has proposed a very big housing bill, SB 827, empowering the state to override local zoning laws to let developers build taller and more densely around rail stations and bus lines. The bill would let developers put up buildings between 4 and 8 stories tall, even if local zoning codes don't allow it. The greater height would be allowed to projects closer to transit lines and on major streets. The bill would not apply not only in commercial areas, but also in the bill would apply in commercial areas and single family zones. And then according to the LA Times, I think that you're in favor of this, but I just wanted to read this from the LA Times. They are concerned that by setting blanket height and density increases, the bill as currently written would eliminate key affordable housing incentives and protections designed to reduce displacement in gentrifying neighborhoods.
So, you know, if I could just first specify that SB 827 is in its infancy, okay? There are going to be many different iterations of this bill. There will be density, you know, there will be demolition controls, and a local inclusionary housing law won't be trumped. And so I ask that, you know, I'm sure that me and Tim Redmond probably won't ever invite each other to Hanukkah or whatever, but, you know, he's got a lot of good points, but I'm frustrated that we're taking a just this is bad right away without admitting that there's a long way to go before the bill is in its final draft. And I would just also add that it is that same local zoning control that has made Marin what it is, that has made Orinda what it is, that has made, you know, so we have to admit that we are hiding behind neighborhood character and local control to literally just say no to everything. And, you know, these transit stations, BART was a major, major investment from everyone, right? The fact that when you get out at Orinda BART station and it's a sea of grass, that's what it is, or a parking lot, there's the fact that there's no housing on there because of the single-family home neighborhood character should outrage everyone. And the only way to tackle it and not violate various fair housing and other laws is to write a statewide measure. But, you know, again, we have to make sure we're protecting our low-income communities. And I know for a fact that Senator Wiener wants to do that more than anything.
Well, this brings up an important question. What is the appropriate role for state lawmakers? Should they take control away from local lawmakers and local communities? I mean, that's really what this bill gets at.
I think what's important to understand here is that what we are dealing with is the legacy of redlining, the legacy of the previous eras of urban renewal programs where low-income communities and communities of color were pushed out of communities, where low-income communities and communities of color were disinvested. And now we face the legacy. The legacy is that historically disadvantaged communities are now facing the pressure of gentrification and displacement because it's those very places that we need to build near transit. And so there's an imbalance to the need for more housing and then the places that we want to build more housing and who's going to be helped and who's going to be hurt. The Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California is committed to finding a solution that balances what we need. We absolutely need to protect our historic communities and communities of color. Lower income people should not have to be moved for towers to come in. At the same time, we need to build more housing for people. We are facing a crisis that goes up the income chain, and we have a lot of work to do to find those compromises and solutions.
And it goes further than redlining. I mean, last week we did a show with Richard Rothstein about his new book, The Color of Law.
and from Hunters Point to Berkeley, you name it, loans were not given
Absolutely.
To African Americans.
Absolutely.
They could not live in certain neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
And, you know, as he said, we are feeling the effects of that
today. And it's those Absolutely. Neighborhoods. It's those neighborhoods who are now saying, no, I don't want any housing. Go build that housing only downtown. And those neighborhoods exist because we manufactured a way to only let low-income people live downtown in the urban core, as they used to say it. And so, you know, to be frank, you know, out at the ocean in San Francisco, that's really close to a bunch of transit. And it's a suburb. And it shouldn't be.
Well, I would say that the other aspect of this is who gets to decide
right.
and
mm-hmm.
who wins
mm-hmm.
and who loses. And the state law is quite a sledgehammer, and it doesn't it's not localized for the needs of different communities. And what's needed in Pleasanton or Palo Alto is very different than what's needed in Oakland or, you know, or Antioch or San Francisco. So I think that we have a lot of hard work to do in communities so that communities are empowered, so communities can take leadership about what's important to them and their communities, and so that we can address the housing crisis that goes up the income chain right now.
But if a sorry to just keep
just
ranting
quickly.
On this,
We're almost
if
out
a community
of time.
Votes on and has enacts a local inclusionary housing, low income housing requirement, then that community is self determining, and the state is merely saying that you can keep that, but you just have to build more housing.
Well, we will definitely continue to follow this issue. And if you want to do some research on Scott Wiener's bill, SB 827, it's getting a lot of media coverage. One of our listeners mentioned the coverage over at 48 Hills. We've got some links on our website. Something else to follow, San Francisco Assemblyman David Chu recently announced a proposal to spend $1 billion of California's $6 billion budget surplus to build affordable housing for low-income families and permanent shelter for the chronically homeless. So we will continue to do shows about this and find out who really is making these decisions. Sam Moss is executive director of the Mission Housing Development Corporation, one of the largest nonprofit housing organizations in San Francisco. Amy Fishman is executive director of the Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California, and they work with affordable housing developers. Amy and Sam, thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much for your work.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about class with Anna Sale, creator of WNYC's podcast, Death, Sex, and Money. She recently aired a series on how we perceive and talk about class as inequality continues to widen. How does class influence our lives? That is tomorrow. Your Call is produced here at KALW in San Francisco. If you'd like to sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show. Josh Wilner is our social media producer. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for joining us. It's your call.